Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of Backstage Chicago. I'm Lisa Fielding with WBBM News Radio. Today we're in Chicago's Westtown neighborhood and we're talking everything cabaret. Welcome to my guests, Hillary Ann Feldman, Anne Brunell, and Kyle Husted. Thanks so much for joining us. And you guys are all performers, ambassadors, all of the above. Please tell us about yourself and we'll go from there. Kyle.
We are a little bit of everything. Yeah. You're right. We're entertainers, we're jugglers, we're musicians, we are producers. And in the art of cabaret, you really have to sort of wear all those hats. It's a good thing that we like to wear hats, I guess.
Literally.
It keeps us young, keeps us diverse, and it keeps us exploring and finding new ways to always be presenting something.
You know? Anne, you've been doing this for a while.
I have been doing this for a while, and I agree with Kyle that we have to, whatever opportunity comes our way, we have to seize it, and we have to make it work. So it's been really like challenging and very inspiring for our inventiveness as artists. We have to reinvent ourselves. And not even talking about the pandemic, just like everything we go to do, you know, where location, subject matter, but we always have to juggle and kind of reinvent ourselves.
Hillary.
I'm not sure how much I have to add to that, but I agree as well. And I think it's what pushes us outside our comfort zones, whether it's creative or not, you know, whether it's learning how to hang lights in a venue that doesn't know how to do it. Yeah. It, pushing us outside our comfort zone makes us good problem solvers, and that actually does breed creativity.
So how did you all get involved in this? Were you performers as young people? Did you always sing? Did you always dance? Did you always want to perform?
Oh, always.
Yes.
Always.
That's usually the case when I talk to performers. Yeah.
I would sing for a lollipop to anyone who would listen. I mean, at basketball games. I mean, I would sing Winnie the Pooh to anyone. Yeah. Absolutely anyone that had candy. And then I took it on the road and I thought, well, this is a hit. Let's go to the nursing home, you know. And Hillary, you can relate to that because what you do today, you provide a lot of entertainment to people in various environments, like with AOK, you know. Yeah. So relating to that, like just taking your show out there and giving it to people who maybe can't find you, you know.
Right.
And that starts at an early age.
Yeah, same with you ladies. Yes,
I remember. I have early memories of, you know, being at a cottage where there was rooms we slept in that had curtains rather than doors. You know, like was kind of a makeshift where everyone just crashed, and families, you know, would come together and all the and neighbors would come over and we would actually put on entire plays and with songs and chase scenes where we would run through the audience. And,
wonderful.
Yes, so we were always inventing that kind of thing and performing. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy. I came through music for sure, but I had parents who were always discouraging it. You know,
really?
My parents are both English. They grew up during World War II, you know, rationing and all that stuff. They're very practical, very British. And they just did not want me to go into performing. You know, they wanted me to be safe and practical and smart. And so I tried. I really tried.
Yeah.
But I found my way here anyway. I think if it's in you that way, you...
I think so, too.
You may take a very windy path then, which I did, but you end up where you belong.
So let's tell our audience, what really is cabaret? It's kind of a wide range of kind of performing, and depending on where you are, right? It's all about the venue, too, and the storytelling. Tell me a little bit about that.
From my perspective, what isn't cabaret when it comes down to it? You know, there's so many genres that fit in within the umbrella. And I sort of dial it back one and say, well, it's a lot of genres in the nightlife entertainment industry. So generally, we all gravitate towards bistros and small performance venues, small theaters, and, you know, quote unquote, cabarets, which, you know, are small table, intimate performance environments. And you can find any style of act in those rooms. You can find comedians there. You find burlesquers there. You find singers there. You find small
magicians.
Jazz ensembles. You know, we're all feeding the same sort of vein. You know, we're all keeping the same rooms alive and well.
Okay. Well, it's all about nostalgia too, because I know that Chicago just celebrated or is celebrating its 100th anniversary of Cabaret. So Cabaret goes way back in Chicago, and I did a little reading from the materials that you sent me, and it's so fascinating about how many places were around and what it really meant to people in the 1920s and that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about that influence, not only on the performance history, but just pop culture and just kind of people's sanity back then and even now to gather and be entertained and be happy. Yeah. And
well, there was a lot of rooms on the south side of Chicago, so many people don't know that. There were a lot of rooms on the south side of Chicago, and they had featured a lot of African-American artists. And so they created their audience there. They, you know, they changed the shows to reflect their life as artists. And they, you know, they took from the American Songbook, the Great American Songbook. And so things that we know as, like, hits from the, you know, 20s and 30s and stuff like that, they were, you know, doing popular music, dance, instrumentals. And sometimes there would be, like, variety shows that, you know, I grew up with. Those on television. You know, when we were growing up, there was all these variety shows on, but this is what it was like in these cabarets on the south side of Chicago. And they came really, you know, over from Paris. So that kind of style of breaking the fourth wall and including the audience happened, you know, in Paris, and they were exchanging, you know, any kind of, I don't know how to say it. They were like breaking the fourth wall, engaging the audience, you know, not just like, I'm thinking in my mind, mimes, you know.
Like people, Trek and Moulin Rouge and all that kind of thing,
right? That kind of thing. And that moved over here, and then we had our own version of it. Chicago was very flush with cabarets and small rooms. And then, you know, Prohibition hit and, you know, kind of put a kibosh on that, and then it, you know, flourished underground.
Yes, I was just going to say, what effect did the Prohibition repeal happen, though? So they'd go underground to these cabarets to get their alcohol, and then what, 1933, Prohibition was repealed, and it did have a profound effect on cabaret then.
Yes, it did. It took a long time. A lot of the clubs closed and, you know, never rebuilt back. But there are some, you know, popping up down there, and, you know, I certainly went there when I first moved to Chicago. I went to some of these venues and, you know, heard Von Freeman and all these places, and, you know, Marlene Shaw, like, these are just, you know, places that have been in the last recent years. But, you know, they're coming back.
Yes.
On the south side.
Well, the Green Mill is one of those clubs that go back to the 1907, I believe. It's still around. Mm-hmm. And I believe, you know, cabaret is all about the intimacy. You mentioned that, one of you did, about how intimate it is and breaking that fourth wall, and people like that intimacy. How is that for performers to be so intimate with the audience?
Oh, I love it. I love having the opportunity to react to your audience in such a raw and visceral way. And that also means, as an entertainer, you have to be quick. You have to be able to react to what happens in the room in real time, and anything can happen, you know? So that's what makes every single show and every single performance special. You know, there's no other place where you can find, you know, audience interjections that are affecting what the artist is doing on stage. It's just, you know, they're throwing things at you. You're throwing it back. It develops a rapport. Everyone starts to basically fall in love in this room for a night, you know, and by the end of the night, people go, what? A tremendous experience, because not only do you have a connection with the entertainer, and vice versa, the entertainer has a connection with you, you leave there feeling like you know each other a little bit better, and it becomes very personal that way, you know?
About the community that Cabaret has become.
Oh, we have a lovely community, I think. Certainly a very welcoming, very supportive group of people here in Chicago. And I think there is still some, and when I say division, I don't mean adversarial. I just mean space between different sort of sectors of cabaret. Like, you know, I do what probably is considered pretty straight-laced contemporary American cabaret, where it's really just storytelling and song. It's just me and a pianist and a show about something that I want to talk about. And but I don't, for instance, I don't know a lot of burlesque artists. I know a few. I know one. I know a few. But I mean, there's a, you know, there's not as much overlap between my world and that world as I'd actually like there to be, mm-hmm. which is part of the mm-hmm. reason Chicago Cabaret Week is really exciting coming up.
And you're teasing that, because we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Yeah. You just kind of gave us a tease about what you do. Tell mm-hmm. me a little bit about each of your acts and how you kind of keep them fresh.
Sure. I guess for me, I started a company called the Cabaret Project, and it's a production company. And I wanted to bring to the table something that wasn't really being done in the cabaret community at the time. So this was in the earlier 2000s. And I had come back from cruise ship work, and I wanted to bring sort of a little bit more variety and review show to the table that had just sort of a little bit more of a stylized edge to it. But then I also wanted to incorporate that variety. So I always hired guest acts that were outside of the singer genre. So I always had a burlesque artist or a performance of some kind. There's been fire spinners and jugglers and Ooh. Magicians. And I had a clown one day that was just something else. I mean, I didn't realize clowns could
You never
be
know what
that
happens
fun,
when you hire you know. A clown.
But it's introduced me to a lot of different genres in performance, and that's what I love so much about it. And so I really try to champion the torch of marrying all these genres together and bringing the community into a more broad scope, you know. So, you know, for a while I was a venue owner. I had a place in St. Louis that did exactly that, you know, and it was burlesque, and it was funk, and it was you know, straight-laced cabaret, and it was all the things, and it was a little piano bar and a little bit not, anyone found a home there, and it was just such a diverse crowd that was coming there. And unfortunately that didn't make it through this pandemic, but I carry with me, you know, all of that, all the lessons that I learned there and all of the people that I worked with. And that's sort of what thrills me and drives me in this art, you know, is that diversity.
And you and your husband, you looks like your bio is a novel, because you've done so many things and you've traveled the world. Yes. Tell me a little bit about your act and what you do and how you've kind of evolved through all of this.
Well, I work a lot with my husband. We come up with arrangements, you know, together. And we've been working together a long time. When we first met, we said, oh, I have my band. And he had a band that was kind of like a Manhattan Transfer, for vocalists. And they did really heavy, like, jazz arrangements, bebop and vocalese. And I had a pop band, you know, we did originals and blues and stuff. Anyway, so we're like, we're never going to work together because this will ruin the relationship, you know.
Battle
and
of
course, as soon as a bar called us up and said, you know, we need a duo for... We're like, we're there. Anyway, so we kind of developed the act because we were asked to, and we just enjoyed it so much. And so we kind of merged ourselves together with that, and now there's like jazz and pop and blues in there all together. And during the pandemic, we were shut down. We were unemployed on all fronts, you know. And so like a lot of us, but anyway, what happened then was Mark said, well, I think we should just live stream. And I'm like, do you know how? He's like, no. I'm like, you turn the phone this way. And, you know, anyway, so we started doing that, and we ended up doing three seasons, and we got a lot more technical about it. And so that's how we related to our audience. That's how we grew our audience. That's how we kind of kept people together. And it became like we would rehearse daily, and it became a mission of ours to lift people's spirits during the pandemic. So with our act, we try to do that, you know, and that's how we got through that. And as a result of that, we're going to record we're finishing up a new album with some of those pandemic arrangements.
Wonderful. Yeah. So you're a musician and a singer with your
mm-hmm.
husband? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So give us kind of a tease of what you guys kind of do if we saw a show.
Okay, we're keeping the album on lockdown.
Okay, you don't have to talk about that. But okay. What do you do in a normal show?
In a normal show, we're doing our thing. Our signature thing is that we do two voice a cappella, and so we will take an arrangement of a tune and kind of strip it bare, like a Bobby McFerrin. But we need two voices to do that because he's phenomenal. And
it is so charming. It is so charming. I love every second of that.
Yeah. So that's kind of our where we veer off of the normal cabaret.
We dance in the streets of San Juan together. We wake in the morning San Juan and breathe all the air. The Sea of San Juan for treasure, and lay in the afternoon shade of palms on the white sands. And if a shooting star should pass us by, we wouldn't make a wish or even try, 'cause the wish we would make is to sleep.
Would you describe all of you guys as storytellers? Do you push boundaries as part of being a performer? You said you're kind of straight-laced, but
I am. But even in my straight-laced world, first of all, I mean, one of the things I love about cabaret, even the straight-laced cabaret, is that the music I use can be from any genre as long as it helps me tell the story. Yeah. And I have two things I think I'm known for, which is one is considering that the Great American Songbook is still being written, and making sure to highlight the great songs that are being written today that won't find a voice or an audience except through the cabaret artist. And the other is by kind of pushing the boundaries of what shows can be about. So I don't know how many years ago now, 7, 8 years ago, I developed a show that was a tribute to Audrey Hepburn, which is obviously not, she was not known as a singer, right? And people kept going, well, how are you doing that? But by using music, some of which is associated with her and some of which is not, but all of which helps me tell her story. It became a very rich, fast, it's actually still my most popular show. So I like to push those boundaries as well. And then I have this, aside from my solo life, I have an organization called Acts of Kindness Cabaret, and that's taking cabaret and using it to help others in a tangible way. And we do that by, offering up cabaret performances as fundraising events for other nonprofit organizations, largely free of charge. So we go in, we bring a show that has three professional singers, a broad theme to appeal to the non-cabaret world, right? And we bring lights and sound so we can turn any venue into a cabaret space. And the nonprofit that we're working for, they fill the seats. So these are generally audiences that maybe don't even know what cabaret is and are experiencing it for the first time. And then they sell the tickets and keep all the money. So they raise money for their cause, and we get to introduce cabaret to brand new audiences in the Chicago area.
Wonderful. Yeah. I'm always looking for new experiences in Chicago. And while cabaret is certainly not new, it is very new to many people. Like you just mentioned, do you find that's the case?
Yeah.
But they come to a show and they say, oh, I saw this on Facebook, or someone said I should come to the show and I can't believe I've missed out on this entire time. And it's been going on for so long. Yeah. And once you find it, I feel like you become hooked.
Yes.
You do. Yeah. There's a whole generation of people that missed this. And, you know, and now they're just discovering it for the first time. What's old is new again. You know, even when you look at fashion, I'm starting to see tight rolled jeans and acid washes walking around, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. Boy. It's coming back around. It is cyclical. And, you know, the thing about cabaret is that it thrives when the world is in a bit of turmoil. And that seems to be when the art form has a resurgence. And this happens very cyclically. Mm-hmm. And it seems that we are in a time right now where we're coming out of some turmoil.
What do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about.
That happened, and people are looking for new things to do, and all of a sudden they're discovering these rooms. I'm seeing pop-up shows in bars and small cocktail places that I never had live music before, and it's becoming like a very saturated thing. Like, there's so much happening, and you can discover it. It seems around the turn of any corner in the city, which is amazing to see, you know. But yeah, there is a generation of people that missed that because rooms dried up for a little while.
Yeah,
you know, it was like huge in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And Rush Street was massive with clubs and live music. And then in the late 90s and into the early 2000s, there was a decline. Yeah. And it's really interesting because burlesque became on the uptick during that time period. People were discovering burlesque, but burlesque had been dead since the 60s.
So interesting. So it I was didn't
like between the singers and the strippers, you know, it was like, okay, it's your turn, it's your turn, it's your turn. And now the strippers have had a real big, they've had a real big push. And now they're lifting the singers up, you know, yeah. And we're coming back around, and it just keeps the flow keeps going. So these communities just continue to thrive.
Yeah. And I think people are craving the connection too, and not just because of the pandemic. I think technology has made us very separated. And when you have that, there's something different. It's one thing, we can all watch the same movie in our homes and then talk about it later. But it's different when you're all in the room experiencing the same thing at the same time. And if that same thing is live, it's all the more intense and special because you can't go see that same thing tomorrow. You could go back to the same show tomorrow and not have the same experience because the energy in the room would be different. The show will be slightly different. It's a really different experience. So for people for the generation that missed it, who's now getting a taste of it, I think it's a really thrilling thing for them. And for those of us that just have missed it, you know.
People are looking for experiences. And I know it was kind of there before the pandemic, but I think people definitely, people don't buy stuff anymore. They want experiences, I've found. I know, I've always been there. Yeah. But you guys are certainly it. Now, you were talking about your first kind of live show back, and that was just recently. Tell me a little bit about that. Was that an emotional experience for you?
Yes. I think before this interview started, Lisa, you were talking about why you started this podcast, and I think that's really intriguing too. To share with people your need for art and culture. And, you know, in the pandemic, we all discovered, Hillary said, you know, we all consumed art and culture, you know, in vast amounts to get through this, you know, and so it is a needed thing in our lives. It makes our lives pretty. It makes our lives meaningful. And it also, like, we can share experiences by having this kind of live show. One thing we did during, and my emotional response to singing live was, I was just doing one of those live streams and the audience was outside on a pool deck, you know, and I didn't know them, but they immediately kind of spontaneously during one of the songs got up and started dancing with each other. And I was realizing, I just was overwhelmed because I realized that that was what, you know, everyone was missing, you know, and I turned the camera on the audience because I thought it was really moving. But yeah, so during the pandemic, I think that we all found out that we needed art. And I think what happened one time to all three of us here, Chicago Cabaret Professionals is like kind of like this mothership of a cabaret organization that's a member-driven organization. And the city of Chicago asked us to do a parade and go down State Street on a float. And we're used to singing in tiny little clubs. And so I said to Kyle, what do you think?
I'm in. I said, I am.
I go, come on. I go, look at him.
In.
He loves a parade.
I'm so in.
I go, Hillary.
She's like, well, what are we going to do?
I know. So it was like a kind of, we were thrown. We put out ideas to the whole membership, and nobody could think of things. So all of a sudden, I said, Kyle, he calls me up. He's like, I've got it. It's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Re-celebration of 35 years from the movie, and he came up with this, and anyway.
Danke schön for everyone.
Danke schön.
Danke schön all the way.
We went into the studio, and we recorded our vocals on these songs, Twist and Shout and Danke schön, and we rode that float down State Street, and thousands of people.
You walked.
She walked in these 1980s leg warmers.
In this exact sweater.
Yes. Wow.
Like, in a fashion
coming
around again.
And yes. We got, so here, come to find out, one of our members is a Ferris Bueller impersonator.
No.
He is. Yeah. It just kept lining up and lining up and lining up.
The float guy, the gods I called with him, you. And the float guy goes, oh, yeah, we did the movie. You know what? The float.
And the costume lady said, oh yeah, I worked on the movie. I had the costumes.
No.
And I was like, oh, this is like, it couldn't have been any.
Like right. That, like magical. And so then here we are, this small little cabaret group dancing for ever. It was,
which was this? I missed this.
It was Arts in the Dark.
It was Halloween. Arts in the Dark. That's always by Halloween.
Yes.
Yep. On the Cultural Mile. Oh, I love that. Okay.
Yes.
Now I know what
you're talking
about.
Commissioner Mark Kelly pushed us over the edge.
Shireen, yes.
He did.
And I'm a little afraid that we might get asked to do it.
Of course. You got to top that.
Of course
that.
We will.
Come on, get your brain going.
You know it is. You know it is.
What's the anniversary of what 80s movie this year?
Yeah, exactly.
You always can tap into your 80s.
Inspiring to see thousands of people. Just celebrate Chicago, because that's an iconic Chicago thing. And I was like, okay, this is how music happens. You know, this is how it affects people.
Open air, outside, doing it, you know.
Absolutely.
And we even all took to, it, even during the pandemic, we all took to yards and gardens and spaces that were outside. So beyond streaming, you know, I did a porch concert, or I would sing off of a balcony like Evita, and to whomever would listen. And it didn't matter. It wasn't charging tickets. It was just like, make the music, keep it alive, show people that there's hope.
There was
that's the biggest
thing. There was a CCP member who, she lives out in the western suburbs, and she did a like mini Ravinia in her backyard. Mm. She had a nice big yard. Was that where you had your thing, at the pool deck?
No.
No. Oh, but she has a pool in her backyard, but a big, you know, a yard surrounding it. So people, and she marked out spots, so everyone was socially distanced, and then the singers were on the other side of the pool. Mm. And she would have like three or four acts come and give an evening, and people would just, it was donations at the gate.
Amazing.
You know, and then she, all the money went directly to the artist, which was really nice.
Wonderful.
So she just split it up among, it honestly was one of the best paying gigs I'd had in a long time.
I bet. It
because
great.
The people who came were so generous,
right.
But also it was just such a nice thing for all of us to be able to sing in front of an audience. You know, it had been, at that point it had been months. She did it the first summer, and then it was such a hit. She redid it last summer, even though the stuff was open.
I had a big pool and yard. I'd do that too. And I'd hire all of you.
For sure.
Okay. So why we're here mostly is because we're talking about something that's happening, coming up, and it's the first of its kind. So I'm going to let you guys take over and tell me a little bit about what's happening here in Chicago.
It is Chicago Cabaret Week. It is coming up, finally.
Woo-hoo.
We have been working on this project since 2019, and it was slated to actually start in 2020.
In March of 2020.
What happened in March of 2020?
I can't imagine.
Yeah, the weeks rolling up to it, we were like, and we were...
Yeah,
just
46,
like everybody.
46 shows were booked.
That original festival was massive.
Yeah.
46 shows, every single venue we could find, multiple shows a day. And, you know, coming out of this, we just jumped off again. And we were like, pick up where we left off. Let's revamp a little bit. We'll shrink it down and have a smaller version of what we had originally planned that gives... a smattering of what's available out there on the market and make it a less competitive environment where we're not offering five or six or seven shows a day. We're offering one or at the most two on any given day. But even when we offer two, they're at different time slots. So you can experience a little bit of everything that the city has to offer if you follow the festival.
Yeah. Okay, so it's going to be at different venues throughout. How's this going to work?
15 different venues.
Oh,
really,
here.
I should say that Claudia Hummel, who's one of the coordinators with us, of the four coordinators, she couldn't be here today, but she has an organization called Working in Concert, and we came to choose Chicago, the city's board of tourism, and presented them with the idea that they could repeat theater week or they could repeat restaurant week, you know, and have a cabaret week, you know. And so we follow those same lines, like the prices are $15 to $30, so really cheap.
Wonderful.
And then you can see all different areas of the city, and you can see different kind of acts all throughout the cabaret festival. This will be the first ever cabaret festival anywhere.
Really? Anywhere?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
come on. Yeah. We're the pioneers of many things. So
we're very excited, having it. It's going to be May 6th through 16th. It also involves some French performers who are coming over from the Paris-Chicago kind of connection, and they are going to do workshops during the day, and then they'll be at all the shows during the nighttime, and they'll perform in some of them. Yeah, so we have...
So you talk about workshops. You do teaching, right?
We all do teaching.
Okay, you all do. Okay.
We all teach a little bit. It's in our blood. But yeah, I'm teaching alongside some other people in the Cabaret Connexion. I teach a class that's burlesque movement minded. So it's to help the singer get more in tune with their bodies, think about their movement, their motion, how they're emoting through just their simple tasks of delivering the song in their bodies and being comfortable with that. And, you know, that's something that burlesque is very good at. They're very good at... having a body positive sense and also using their instrument, which is their body, flawlessly, you know, and the singer spends so much time on the lyrics and the nuances of singing that we sometimes forget that we have hands. So it's just helping people along that path and that journey.
But well, I think everyone has an inner cabaret in them at some point. Whether you can sing or not sing or dance
that's
or not
very
sing.
True.
But there at some point in your life, whether it's at a party or karaoke or how you say karaoke. People make fun of me. I say it differently every time. Anyway.
I think this is actually right.
Really? It's the Japanese version?
Yeah, that's
karaoke.
Anyway, I feel like whether you are able to do it or not in your own mind, at some point, I think everyone wants to learn something like that, don't you think?
Because it's so approachable. Yeah, yeah. That's why it is so approachable.
Everyone bolts out a song at some point.
Because the singing, honestly, in certain forms of cabaret, the singing is secondary to the storytelling. How well you sing is secondary to how well you tell a story.
Yeah, that's true.
And there are a lot of people who find their way to cabaret later in life, which is kind of good because then they have more interesting things to say at that, you know, as opposed to someone who's 20.
Right.
But they, you know, they're just exploring their creativity and their emotional expression. You know, that's how they find their way to it.
Well, also, we've been getting a lot of younger people who, you know, they're auditioning for shows, and if they get in a show, then they are going to play a part, and the director's going to tell them how to play that part, you know, for the most part. And I think a lot of those younger people and actors and singers and performers find their home in like Chicago Cabaret Professionals has levels, you know, students, and we have shows that we produce for all levels. Mm. So like if you wanted to try it, Lisa, you can come on in.
I'm a good storyteller, but not such a good singer.
Sounds like you're perfect.
Yeah.
I'm pretty typical that way, I think, because I came through musical theater.
Okay.
I mean, I came late to musical theater, but I spent about 10 years working pretty steadily in Chicago theater. And then I saw my first cabaret show right around 2001, 2002. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's what I need to be doing. And I stopped doing theater completely, and I focused my whole life learning this craft and working on it and creating stuff. And it was the right shift for me. I mean, you know, it is like telling the stories you want to tell, singing the music you want to sing. It gives you a tremendous amount of freedom. It also puts all the onus on you. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a good trade-off, I think.
So where do we see all of you on a regular basis? Just kind of everywhere?
Yeah.
Kind of everywhere.
Yeah, kind of tell us a little bit about the places that are...
Part of these pop-up bistro things that are happening. You know, there's shows that are happening at Vincent in Andersonville. There's shows that are happening at Drew's on Halstead. I'm going to be there the next two nights. I'm at Drew's tonight and, you know, for this weekend. But there's... Elixir's doing stuff, and where are you playing these days?
I'm playing at Vincent and Drew's, and I'm playing at Hey Nani, but for this festival.
Oh, at Ireland Tonight? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. The festival, the 15 different venues is very exciting because it's Le Piano way up on the north side.
So cute.
And then it's...
Where's that?
It's in Rogers Park.
Okay.
And then there's... The Haven in Bronzeville, which we love the Haven. Bobby Wilson will be there. There's the Beverly Arts Center, which is on the south side in Beverly. And so you can, if you go to ChicagoCabaretWeek.org, you can see like the 15 different venues. But Epiphany Center for the Arts is like an old church that has three performance spaces in it, and even more than that, actually. But we're going to be at the in the sanctuary for the kickoff night. All mm-hmm. three of us are going to be there with Claudia.
Yep.
And we're going to be doing the kickoff, and that's going to be a part.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's May 6th.
Yeah,
okay.
May 6th. You'll have to come. But yes. Anyway, so I'm looking, thinking of the other venues.
Davenport's,
of course,
right? And well, there's a card right there. We don't have to memorize.
Well, why don't you look at that? Yes.
At
I have Davenport's
Fulton
in
Street
here in my notes
Collective.
Here.
Newport Theater.
Mm-hmm. Venues Cabaret.
No, that's Venus.
Oh, Venus. What did I say? Venues. Yeah, Venus Cabaret. I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah.
Venus Cabaret is next to the Mercury Theater.
I just saw the Lenny Bruce store. Yeah. My first podcast was about, I'm not a comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce, in the Venus Cabaret Theater. Yes. And I love that little space. It's perfect.
It's so great. Yeah. It's
and my
so
friend
great.
Ronnie Marmo has been there since November. And I said, that's exactly where Lenny Bruce or someone like you would be played perfectly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I agree. I love that
it's
space.
It's like the new London House, you know.
Yes.
Mr. Kelly's, yeah.
Yes, yes.
There's also
so
the Polo Inn.
The Polo Inn is by Sox Park. It's in Bridgeport, and they have wonderful food. And I think Greta Pope is doing a show about the history of Paris Noir there. So she's doing two sets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just amazing.
I think the key about this Cabaret Week is we were talking about the fact that people thought that arts were a luxury, right, during the pandemic.
Right.
We've all established that we need that for our serotonin every day, right? But this Cabaret Week is really reasonable. It's a new experience. You don't have to plunk out $200 for a show, that kind of thing. I think that's the key here.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think, well, I can't see that Broadway show because it's pretty expensive
right.
these days and even more now. So, but your shows are absolutely the opposite of that. And you can really get a unique experience for a bang for your buck, right?
Right, and try a bunch of different things.
Yes.
That we tried to, when the selection process for Cabaret Week, and not only involved, you know, assessing skill level and talent and things like, it also involved assessing what variety of stuff we wanted to include as many different, so there's jazz and burlesque and straight-laced cabaret, and, you know, there's so many different kinds of things going on mm-hmm. that Great American Songbook. So everyone can get
a little taste
of something new or find something that they already love.
Then come back again and again beyond Cabaret Week. That's the purpose, right?
That's the goal.
I forgot to mention, there's a new young singer that has just recently come into, and we met her on the parades, but she's doing a Filipino act, a cabaret act. So that's completely new to us, you know, and we're so excited about that.
Well, I look forward to seeing all of you Cabaret Week on parades, anywhere. Hillary Ann Feldman, Anne Burnell, and Kyle Husted, thank you so much for sharing your wonderful experiences as cabaret artists. Check out a unique experience for not a lot of money, and it's invaluable to have this experience with all of you guys in any venue that you can find in Chicago. Should we just Google cabaret and we'll find something beyond the Cabaret Week?
Oh my gosh, if you Google Chicago and cabaret, you'll get a lot from those two musicals, but you also get a lot of
us.
Yes, you will.
A lot of us, but we're out there. You can find us anywhere.
Good luck to all of you.
Yes,
thank you so
thank
much
you.
For joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up on the next episode of Backstage Chicago, she's one of the few women calling the shots backstage in the live performance industry. Rachel Tobias has been the stage manager for the Lyric Opera for 20 years. She calls herself the air traffic controller of every stage production. We'll talk to Rachel about being a mega multitasker and what it feels like when the curtain rises and falls, and why her adrenaline rush arrives after the show is over. Listen to the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.